Hello, greetings, and welcome out there in podcast land. You have stumbled, fallen, or tripped upon Johnny Has the Keys, a podcast where two guys sit around and they talk about genre movies, horror, science fiction, literature, television, the influences that movies have had on us and on other films and genre pieces. My name is David. I'm here with my good friend Tim. Hey, Tim.
Hello, David.
How have you been? What have you been up to? It's been, a week now, at least, since we've recorded a podcast, so it feels good to be on the air again. How you doing?
Oh, I'm fine, considering we're in the midst of an apocalypse and, you know, The Stand, you know, 2020, Stephen King's new version of The Stand, the coronavirus.
Oh, yeah.
COVID-19.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Crazy out there. Crazy happenings.
But
that means hopefully millions of people will be home and tuning into this podcast. You know?
That's what I think. So they've got plenty of time to catch up on back episodes too.
That's true. They do. Have you done anything fun or genre related this week? Read anything? Watched anything?
Actually, I have, and I think that you'll know that I've had plenty of time on my hands when I tell you what. I discovered a movie that we have talked about before that I never thought would be available. It's available on Amazon. And I sat down and I watched all 70-something minutes of it. And it is called...
Okay.
Where Have All the People Gone?
Where Have All the People Gone? Who did that one? We've mentioned that one before, haven't we?
Yes, we have. It is a 1974 television movie starring Peter Graves and Kathleen Quinlan. And Kathleen Quinlan was the daughter. That's how young she was. But Peter Graves is the dad, and it's where they're on a camping trip, and they're checking out some cave, and there's a solar flare while they're in the cave. And when they come out, everybody's gone, and all that's left is their clothing and some white powder where their flesh would have been. Does this ring a bell?
Yeah, it does. But wasn't the threat like animals are still alive or something?
There is a scene where a dog is like attacking them, like some wild dogs, which is funny because it's only been... You know, like a day or two, and the dogs are already wild. So maybe the sun made them crazy. I don't know. I'm looking at it right now. It's directed by John Llewellyn Moxie of the famous Moxies. Actually, he did The Avengers and Manic, so he was just a television director. He did Mission Impossible, which also had Peter Graves in it. But anyway, it's a cheesy sci-fi movie from my childhood that I distinctly remember seeing on television when I was 9 years old. And I've remembered it all these years, and I just think it's kind of funny that I found it on Amazon.
You know, that inspires me because there was one that I saw when I was a kid that I've wanted to see for decades. And it was a science fiction. It was a made-for-television, I'm sure. What was the name of it? I think the name of it was called The Love War. I think. But basically, I think it was Lloyd Bridges. And I can't remember the other one. But basically, it was an old Harlan Ellison type story. It was two alien races have chosen Earth to be their battleground. And you're following one alien as he prepares to meet the champion of the other race. And he's going to be... in human form, too, and they're going to have to fight on Earth. But they don't know what each other look like. They don't know when they're going to run into each other. So it's this cat and mouse kind of game. And
you should do some research on it, and we should do a bonus episode of things like this that we remembered from when we were kids.
Yeah, yeah, that would be cool.
We should, because I actually hunted two of them down on video that I bought about 10 years ago. I'm sure they're bootlegs because they look terrible. But one is House That Would Not Die with Barbara Stanwyck, and that was a TV movie. And another was this weird Canadian show called Circle of Fear that had, and it, Jo Beth Williams was in it, and it had a mud monster. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do. Vaguely, I do remember that one.
And it was salt that killed it. It ended up like falling into the ocean and bursting into flames or something. But that's the one where its hand gets cut off and the hand comes after her. It's good stuff.
Yeah, we should really do one stuff. Of those. do a childhood horror one. You know,
Trilogy that would be of Terror, cool. Kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
We should do that.
Yeah, and like I've said before, the Norless tapes or something. I mean, we should do some of those cool ones like that. That would be cool to do an episode.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of Quatermass. Never mind. I was going to say, I put something on our list, but I think it's Quatermass. It's not Norless. Anyway. Yeah,
it wouldn't be Norless because Norless Sellers, but.
That's what I've been doing. I dived into a childhood nostalgic television film.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I actually had a somewhat epiphany that I ended up watching Alita Battle Angel, which is a movie based on a graphic novel anime kind of thing, basically about a robot girl that ended up being much better than I thought it was going to be. I expected it to be really terrible, but it actually ended up being pretty good, and I liked it. So I would recommend that from a science fiction perspective, but I wanted to mention, I've seen these commercials and I'm curious to watch them now, but I want to know what you thought about like these, it's time to play the most dangerous game kind of movies. There's one called like Ready or Not, which is about like a bride who goes to meet her, you know, her fiance's family, and the thing they do before the wedding is they hunt the bride or hunt each other and try to kill each other.
That actually got good reviews, I believe.
Yeah. And then there's another one that was, I think, postponed or delayed because of some kind of social thing. It was like it had a Columbine thing. I don't know, whatever. It was delayed, but now it's come out again called The Hunt, which is actually the same thing. It's kind of like, it's literally like Most Dangerous Game. The trailer looks like these like six people end up finding themselves tied up in the woods and there's a box of guns near them and they have to try to survive the night or something, you know. I just thought it was very interesting that that's become like a, we're going to make two movies about this kind of topic. So,
well, I mean, a lot of times those things come out in pairs.
True.
We were talking.
One studio hears about the other one doing it.
About The Abyss, and at the same time that movie Leviathan came out, and I believe Deep Star 6 was around then too. It's like,
yep,
I'm sure we could think of better examples though.
But yeah, it's interesting they come out in waves like that, you know, sort of thing. That was,
and then
that
they race the production and try to get theirs out first or whatever. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Monkeys are big this year. Make a monkey movie quick. Yeah, it's like that Roger Corman approach. But so this week, though, we're talking about your genre. We're into a horror world. I mean, some, like, I guess you would probably call this classic horror, almost, wouldn't you?
It's classic horror. It could potentially be iconic horror if you're European. It's very influential. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in it that you see that American directors stole. But what we're talking about is a little film by the quote Italian Hitchcock, Dario Argento, and it is called Deep Red. It came out in 1975, and this, a lot of people know who Dario Argento is. He's pretty renowned, but this is the film that supposedly put him on the map. So this was the one I thought we should do, because I had not seen it previously. Or if I had, I didn't remember it. Not all of it, just scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yeah, I had never seen it. Yep.
Okay.
I had never seen it. So that I was new. I was a deep red virgin, as they say.
Ah, well, there you go. Dario is notorious, especially in the 80s, for having been cut. They would release his films over here, but they would just kind of butcher about 30 minutes out of them. That was usually gore or, I don't know, I guess stuff that American censors just didn't appreciate.
Okay, so, yeah. Well, and I will totally, I mean, you know this story because you and I have talked about it, but our listeners don't. But, okay, so when we first started talking about this movie, and you even said, hey, Deep Red is coming up, so make sure you get the right version. And it's a 2-hour and 4-minute version or 2-hour and 7-minute, whatever it was, blah, blah, blah. Make sure you get it. And it was so hard to find that. And even when I thought I had found it, it was this weird compilation of half Italian, half English, some subtitles, some not. What the? And it got me so confused. Mm-hmm. But finally, I found a version, watched the whole thing, and kind of could figure it out. Then watched the cut version and went, oh, okay. So now I kind of understand, you know, what they did. Although why they cut it, I really don't understand. Even back then, and when was it, 75, 76? Even when it came out on VHS or whatever later, I don't know why they would cut it the way they did.
Well, I mean, it's a little gory, but I mean, Friday the 13th was out 5 years later in America.
Yeah.
To the masses, right. I mean, it was like a.
And to me, it was a lot. Yeah. To me, it was a lot gorier, but right. You know, that's just me. Maybe Italian audiences are sensitive, or American audiences at the time were just sensitive, you know. But this was 75. This was Jaws. You know, they should be used to scary. So, but I have to say, for those of you listening who have never watched an Italian horror movie, it does take some. It's like trying foreign food. You have to give it a little bit of time, and you have to adjust to it and understand that it's going to be a little different. But if you take those caveats, this is, really has some really good stuff to it. Yeah. I mean, I think for me, the key elements of the movie are the performance by Heading. Is it Headings?
Hemmings.
David Hemmings.
Yeah.
Hemmings is really good and really strong all the way through it. And even though this is his first one that got him on the map, you could tell that Dario Argento is a very gifted director, just in his shot structure and everything.
Yeah, it's not his first film, but it is the one that got him noticed.
Right.
He had done three before then. He did Four Flies on Grey Velvet, The Cat of Nine Tails, and The Bird with the Crystal Plumage, and that is known as the Animal Trilogy. Those movies were known more as, I believe, a giallo mystery. And I guess I should go backtrack. For those of you out there that don't know what giallo is, and I think I'm pronouncing it right, it's the Italian word for yellow, which is synonymous with like seedy mystery paperbacks, or kind of like the word penny dreadful in London.
So like a penny. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Except
yeah.
not so much supernatural, as more like a seedy mystery.
Okay.
Dario, and I'm going to say Dario cause it's hard for me to say Dario. Dario was combining giallo with not only, supernatural, but as you see in this film, he was actually kind of bringing the slasher into it as well. So he was kind of combining like three subgenres, for a lack of a better word, in this film.
Mm-hmm.
He comes from a directing family. I don't think I wrote his dad's name down, but before he got into directing, he was a writer, and he wrote. He has a credit, you'll see, with Bernardo Bertolucci for writing Once Upon a Time in the West. Remember that movie?
Okay.
And that's Sergio,
of course.
Sergio Leone, wasn't it? So many Italians. because I was like, what did Bernardo do? Did he do Romeo and Juliet? And I was, no, that's Zeffirelli. Bernardo did Last Tango in Paris. That's who did, you know, that's what he's known for. Bernardo Bertolucci.
Bertolucci.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a little background on Dario.
Well, now I had remembered Dario from, decades ago with you and everything else, of course, but I'd always remembered Bird with a Crystal Plumage. I'd seen that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd seen Opera. I'd seen, he Suspiria. Had a weird one that had a weird, Suspiria I had seen, and they just remade that last
right,
year.
Right.
They did a reboot of it, but a remake. But I also remembered another one, Tenebra or Tenebra or something like that. That was actually pretty cool too. I remember
Suspiria, Tenebra, and one other are part of another trilogy called the Mother Trilogy. Mother of Tears is the third and final of those. So that's part of another trilogy as well. And I've not seen all of those. I've never seen Mother of Tears.
I've never seen Mother of Tears. I've seen Suspiria. I've seen Tenebra. But interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. But he's, you can see how he became known, like you said in the intro, as the Italian Hitchcock.
Very much so. You were saying David Hemmings is a strong part. If I had to say there was a huge element to this film that stands out, it's the visuals. It's a very visual, colorful, beautiful film, especially if you get a really good version of it that's been remastered.
Well, it's also just unique, especially at the beginning. I think it seemed like he got rushed in production, in my opinion, because the last like half hour seems very rushed and fast paced, whereas everything at the beginning is a lot slower and a lot longer.
Yeah, there's one part that's really rushed, and it's when he wakes up outside that burning house, and she's like, "Oh, I had to pull you out." I'm like, "Why didn't they show that?"
Well, yeah, and I've literally got pages and pages of notes that I just took like while I was watching it, of just like questions and stuff. And let me find that one because it was like, really? So the killer hit him on the back of the head but didn't stab him or kill him or do just left him there and set the house on fire? Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's
pretty funny. So, but you know, like at the going back to your visuals at the beginning, the scene with him and his friend Carlo or whomever that are, and Carlo's drunk that night, but they're having that big talk around the fountain. Just the way he directs that scene, and then even with them at like opposite edges of the frame, and that huge fountain statue is in between them.
Yeah,
and they're like little bitty figures having this conversation. It's just really well done.
It is, and I guess I should pause just a moment because we really haven't done a synopsis. Let me try to break this down a little bit.
Spoilers.
Yeah, this movie's about a musician, and he's played by really the only English-speaking, English-born, I guess, actor named Marcus. And he's played by David Hemmings. And he witnesses what I would consider the end of this really horrific murder of a psychic. So he decides that he should try to figure out who it is that did this with the help of this kind of nosy but wanting to very ambitious reporter that wants the story, you know. Later, one of his own friends is murdered at the hands of the same killer, and it basically unravels to where they need to catch this killer before this killer kills them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's an odd plot, and as I told you last week, sometimes things are sacrificed for visuals in this film, and some of that is, plot and story. I mean, it's by far not a perfect movie, but it is a memorable movie for sure.
Very memorable. I mean, I think he loves visceral. He always has in all of his movies that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
So he likes murder to be something very diabolical and something very, gruesome. sort of thing. There are some gruesome murders in this. It has the benefit of not being so gruesome or horrific to me because they use that really, really, really bright red blood that Italian movies use. So it looks like marinara sauce almost. It's just so freaking red.
Dawn of the Dead did the same thing. Looks like paint.
Same thing. Mm-hmm. And you're also thrown off a lot of the times because the music is absolutely terrible all the way through this. It's so funny that he's a musician. The lead character is a musician, but the music in the movie is terrible. It sounded like Tangerine Dream in places. It was just so bad. But that's like, wasn't Dario known for that too, for using weird music or particular music or something?
Funny that you should bring that up, David.
Oh, really?
Dario became friends and a producer for George Romero on Dawn of the Dead.
Ooh, and okay.
When he made Deep Red, he wanted Pink Floyd to score this movie.
Oh, and man.
He could not get them, but he found a band called Goblin. And Goblin is the band that did the music for this movie and also the band that did the music for Dawn of the Dead. So.
Really?
Yeah, same band.
Nuh-uh, because I like Dawn of the Dead. Now I have to watch Dawn of the Dead again because I actually liked it.
Right.
But
right.
They didn't do that music, did they? Mm.
They had a partner.
Because it's really...
Yeah, they did.
It's really cheesy. This music in this movie is really, really cheesy. It just does not work at all. First of all, it is just so pounding and throbbing before the murder. You're like, oh, okay, here comes the murder music. I guess he's going to be killed. You know,
I'm not sure how many films they did with him, but he used them quite a bit, I'm pretty sure. And since he co-produced...
And they're called Goblin, not Goblins. Goblin. With an S.
And because he co-produced Dawn of the Dead with George Romero, he released his own cut of Dawn of the Dead in... And I actually have this in Italy. And it's called Zombie.
Okay.
With an I, Zombi. So the movie that we know as that Lucio Fulci did called Zombie in 1979, a year later, was released in Italy as Zombie 2 and a sequel to Dawn of the Dead, even though they're not affiliated at all. But that's a little...
Okay.
That's a little horror deep dive for any of you horror nerds out there. It's so funny. I was talking to somebody about this shit earlier this morning, and I thought, man, I sound like a lunatic the way I'm talking about all this stuff that I know. It's just crazy. Anyway.
Well, I think this definitely set, you know, one of the biggest keys that I got out of this was this like set the whole slasher thing before slashers came to America. You know, because we said, I think when we did Halloween, that it was one of the first, but it was, you know, really established slashers in the mainstream. But,
right.
You know, this is just like that, even down to the prologue thing, you know, where we get that murder at the beginning, but we don't know anything about it. And then it's like, you know, 10 years later or whatever, the way they do it.
Or the killer POV, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely the killer POV. That's in my notes, too.
But honestly, he's not the first Italian. Mario Bava did it before Argento did.
Argento. Really?
Yeah, he did a movie called Bay of Blood in the early 70s that a lot of people feel is a direct, that Friday the 13th just ripped off, basically. So
okay.
So there's more, it's not just Argento. It goes back in the Italian oeuvre, so to speak.
Hmm.
But yeah.
Do you have background stuff on this or casting on this?
I have casting, but it's not much because most of these people are Italian and I have no idea who they are. One last background I had on the title was they originally were going to call this a saber-toothed tiger, but they veered away from it because it would be too connected to the previous animal trilogy that I mentioned.
They were going to call it Sabretooth Tiger, the movie?
The Sabretooth Tiger. Yeah. That was its original.
Well, what would that
title.
Have to do with the story?
I have no fucking idea. I don't. All right, so you mentioned that Marcus is played by David Hemmings. The only notes I really have are that he starred in Blow Up, which was another famous Italian film. Antonio, what's his face, did that? Remember? It won like an Oscar, didn't it? Or was nominated? Do you remember that film?
Yeah. No. I remember Blow Up.
Well, it's called Blow Up, and I think that we might have even remade it over here with John Travolta, and it was called Blow Out or something.
You did. Brian De Palma did it. Because right. Brian De Palma does that. He right. likes to recreate everything Hitchcock or Argento's done.
But the original, so. The one that put David Hemmings on the map was Blow Up, but he was also in Barbarella, and he was in Gladiator, and now he's dead. So, yeah. And then I've got, you know, the reporter, Gianna Brezzi was played by Daria Nicolodi. Carlo was played by Gabriel Lavia. Carlo's mother, Marta, was played by Clara Calamai. And then, of course, the only other one, I guess, that may stand out is the psychic that is very, very memorably murdered in the first of this film. Is played by Helga Ullman, and she went on to be in other films as well. I can't remember.
She should have. She was really good. Mm-hmm. I really wish she had lasted longer. She was like a little Drew Barrymore. That was the key for me in that one. She reminded me of like, oh, great, huge actress in the beginning, and now she's gone. Mm-hmm. So,
But as far as casting, that's really all I have. I was thinking we might want to talk about some scenes that stand out.
Yeah, I have a ton of just.
I mean, I love that murder that we were just talking about. Like when she's on the phone, she gets off the phone, she goes to the door, but she stops and she doesn't answer it because she's psychic and she knows what's going to happen. And all of a sudden,
yeah.
the door
yeah, yeah,
just
yeah.
gets kicked in and she's just hacked with a meat cleaver. I mean, damn, it's crazy.
Yes. Yeah.
So that would
that's
be
a very good scene.
Out.
And then, but again, it's one of those you have to get used to because you go from this really horrific, you know, death scene or murder scene, and then it suddenly cuts to him and his friend talking again and goes on way too long, and then suddenly you see her at the window or hear her scream, and she's at the window, and you're thinking, I thought she was dead. She's still alive.
No, she has to be impaled on the glass, her throat, that is.
Yeah, throat in the glass kind of thing. That was great. I do like, I thought that was, I've even gotten my notes, great through the glass murder, but the music is terrible. I have, oh my gosh, how severely was this edited? I do have huge compliment to Argento. You can tell the unique directing style, even if you can't understand the dialogue. And that to me was like the scene, even a simple scene like, he witnesses the murder, runs up to her apartment, pulls her off the glass, then the police show up, and it shows him being interviewed by the detective. Well, my version of that was all in Italian with no subtitles, so I had no clue what they were saying to each other. Mm-hmm. But you could still tell what was basically happening by the way Hemmings acted it and the way Argento shot it. So it made, I mean, it was very well, you know, cleverly done. I thought the... I thought some of the scenes just come out of nowhere, and they keep coming out of nowhere all the way through the beginning of this movie. Like suddenly we're visiting Carlo's mom. And I know, you know, later on you figure out why he had to do that from a storytelling perspective, but it just didn't really work well.
How'd you like that night gallery hallway?
Yeah, that was cool.
With all those scary paintings and stuff.
I would have liked one more walk down it to make the ending really cap for me, you know, because he finally comes way back to that. The very, 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 very end, he comes back to that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's not a painting, it's a mirror, you know, kind of gag. I thought there are just some scenes in this that are just thrown in that I didn't like, but I did like, I liked the whole sequence at the haunted house or the mansion. You know, yeah. I thought the way that was shot was good. It was scary. It was creepy. It was very unique to find something behind a plaster wall that you literally dig with your fingers off. That was kind of, 'cause I was so afraid he was going to break a fingernail. I was going, oh my God, he's just going to rip one off or something.
Okay. How about, this is something I loved. The fact that the opening credits start, and then right in the center of the credits, they insert a murder, and then the credits finish. Actually, yeah. you don't even see that much of it. You just see the bloody knife hit the floor in front of the kid's shoes, and then it just cuts
right.
away.
Right, you basically see the shadows fight. Yeah.
That
and you know
away.
It's Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was great. And I like the fact that that becomes the painting, you know, that he finds in the haunted house.
Right.
I've got other things in my notes. Several times I've got, okay, this must be the most vacant city in the world. There is no, it's just totally deserted. Then later on I've got, where is it, does nobody live in this city? I mean, seriously, there's nobody even in the museum. There's nobody on the streets. There's nobody at the library except for one dude. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly he is in the noisiest cafe in the world with them cooking right beside the payphone and all of that noise and all that stuff.
Did you recognize anything by any of the scenes?
Recognize anything by any of the scenes? What do you mean?
Several scenes he set up to look like Edward Hopper paintings. The scene The scene where Carlo is outside the diner right before the woman gets murdered that he sees in the window, that shot of the diner is a very famous Edward Hopper film. Where you can see, it's really long, and you can see in the glass, and there's a few patrons inside, and like a waitress.
And people often do parodies of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have seen that. That's what I thought. I thought that framing looks really unique.
Right.
That's interesting.
And then one that I did not know was the one where there's a piano's being played. I guess it's by Hemmings, and there's a woman with a cup sitting next to the piano. She's got like a teacup. That's a painting called Automat. The previous painting was called Nighthawks, that one of the diner. The one with the woman next to the piano was called Automat. So I like that artists pull from other artists. I just think it's kind of unique that he was inspired enough by those paintings to set them up in a film. I just find that really creative.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I've got... Okay, so you saw murder, you go back home, you're trying to relax at the piano, suddenly you hear weird kids singing, all alone, but nah, you'll just go back to playing the piano. I was like, oh, hell no, I would not be doing that.
Yeah, that's one of those things I was saying where they just sacrifice logic for the visuals. It's like every time someone gets murdered, you hear little kids singing. I'm like, where's that coming from?
Right. Right. But, you know, you and I both always agreed that, you know, either British children or kids kind of, you know, singing or being malicious or maniacal is creepy. It really does. I think it's a primal creep factor to a lot of people.
Well, and speaking of really creepy, this has another creepy thing in it. What about dolls? That crazy one that comes flying across the room. At the, I can't remember what that guy was. He was with the psychic in the very beginning of the film.
Yeah, he was like an author.
Yeah, he was a professor. That's it. Yeah. That's it. And that really crazy mechanical doll comes flying at him. How the hell does that happen? And then he gets murdered, and the murderer just slams his teeth into the desk.
God. Well, he slams his teeth into everything. It's like into the mantle, into the desk. I was going, okay, we get the point that you're knocking his teeth out. Okay, yes, that's very, we got it. Yeah, that one threw me though too, because I was going, what the hell is this doll and where did it come from and what does that mean? I don't get it. But before that, there's always like this. There seems to be like this scare and all this pacing of the murders. There seems to be like this scare, this creep factor, then like a jump scary kind of moment, then a calm, and then the real attack. So like with her, you know, like you said, she gets kind of creeped out. She goes to the door. Suddenly she stops because, uh-oh, she knows who's behind there. There's that her trying to get away. Then, boom, he busts in and kills her. You know, the other lady is there. She senses something, blah, blah, blah. Then all of a sudden a bird flies, her minor bird flies and gets impaled by a knitting needle.
Yeah, he got some.
Then she kind of reacts to that. Then he comes in and starts chasing her, you know.
Yeah, he got flack for that and so, for the lizard. And he swears it's not real, but it looks real.
The lizard?
Yeah, there's a lizard that gets stuck with a pin, like on a board.
Yeah, because the daughter's doing that, the freaky weird daughter that daddy doesn't like.
Right.
You know.
And he said it's not real.
Or that daddy might like too much, we don't.
You know, animal rights activists got all bent out of shape about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In my note, I'm just looking at my notes again. Nice, she said, the ghost of the house. Dead birds on knitting needles. That's kind of cool. Okay, I'm not a fan of this music. Why did he pick this music? If somebody attacks you, yeah, it makes a lot of sense to crawl to the bathroom. What the hell? I've got, this house has the greatest water heater in history.
Yeah, all that hot water.
Why did you drown her and not hatchet her? But that's okay because it gave us good blister makeup.
I have a note from the very beginning. That is the most dirty. That's the dirtiest ass bathroom I've ever seen. I'm trying to
at
think
the theater.
It's at the very beginning. Yes.
Yeah, it's at the theater because he's still there,
and it looks like a gas station bathroom. I was like, "What the fuck, man? That is nasty." And then it cuts to a big eye and someone putting on eye makeup. And I'm like, that's a weird cut. Why is that there?
Well, yeah, he has those. And again, I think it's really weird that he has those in the beginning, but he doesn't have those in the end. Those insert cuts of like somebody putting on eyeliner and then the very, very close-ups of like kid stuff. Like toys and dolls and little braided string and stuff like that, all with that goblin music.
It's because Carlo was the kid that witnessed the murder.
Yeah, but Carlo, but we don't get that later on.
So I mean,
Carlo,
I guess
doesn't have a little.
I guess we can go ahead and spoiler. Marta is the killer. Marta is. You first think it may be Carlo. Then he realizes it can't be Carlo, which I thought was a dumb realization. Carlo was standing in the street when he saw the other woman get impaled on the window or whatever. Carlo was going into the diner.
Right.
But it ends up being Marta, Carlo's mom. And the kid that is in the very insert of the credits at the beginning where the knife is thrown down is Carlo witnessing his father being murdered by his mother. And they brick him up in what you refer to as the haunted house, which was apparently their old house. And David Hemmings, a.k.a. what's his name again? Marcus.
Marco Daly.
Discovers the body and figures everything out. So Marta comes after him. But before I go a little bit further, there is one other famous person that has to do with this movie. And I don't know if you caught it or not. Who do you think?
Obviously not.
Who do you think did the special effects?
Who?
Yeah.
Tom Savini.
Nope.
I don't know.
Carlo.
Well, he's Italian.
Rambaldi.
Rambaldi?
Yeah.
What?
Yes. He's Italian. And he also did E.T.
Yep. He did do E.T. Mm-hmm. That's true. Interesting. That,
yeah, I thought
that
you might like that.
Do that, but that because they're good. I mean, the effects work for me, except for again the bright red blood.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of blood, I've just looked at my notes. It says the maid says all of that blood all over the place. Wait a minute, what blood? There was no freaking blood. The girl was drowned. There was no blood anywhere.
Right. Right. That's funny. But you know what? In the 70s, that bright red blood was in a lot of movies. It was before they came up with that formula with Karo syrup.
I think it had to do a lot with the lighting too. I think it might have looked fine to the special effects guys, but then when you get it under the lighting that they were using to try to get it, you know, because lighting back then had to be so severe mm-hmm. in order to work with the photo plates. So maybe that was it too.
True.
But you did, you know, you just stated basically the plot of this, and it's my key, but I know you've already got it, which is Friday the 13th, right? I mean, this is we think it's the guy, but it's really his mom.
Right. That's a big key. That's a very big key.
Right. Okay.
I don't know that that's in Bay of Blood. I think Bay of Blood's just about a slasher. But this one, yeah, the fact that it ends up being the mother instead of the son is a huge Friday the 13th key.
Yeah. And then I've got, of course, the when he does finally see the skeleton, it's a very Mrs. Bates kind of psycho kind of feel to it. The way he does that quick zoom in on it and everything.
Yeah. I've got that just Hitchcock in general, the camera work and the color remind me of Hitchcock.
Very, very much so. Even the way he did.
Yeah,
the camera's always moving. Even the way he does that realization shot when it's after Carlo has been killed by the police and he was obviously the murderer and the case is closed kind of thing. And he's walking and he's in that same, oh, nobody lives in this city street. And the camera does that big pan all the way around him as he slowly realizes, wait, it couldn't have been Carlo.
Right.
Because Carlo was with me. Mm-hmm. And even though I do have my next note is, really, a voiceover now? We have to have a voiceover now? Why do we have a voiceover now?
Well, and the whole time I was watching it, I was like, you know it's not Carlo. He was in the street with you. What the fuck's going on? And then when he realizes it, I'm like, oh, duh, he's just a little slow.
Yeah, it just took, you know, we. I wonder if we were supposed to realize that before. I guess so, sort of thing. I've got stuff like, okay, seriously? You couldn't have waited until morning? You really want to climb off the terrace and try to break into the wall right now? So, what else? Other good scenes. I do like the way they stage the whole, like, I guess, the next to final scene. So the scene in the school, even though it didn't make logical sense, that was another one of those where I went, okay, so wait, you have a clue that takes you to the school. You're not going to wait till the next morning. You're just going to go break in tonight. Why is this so urgent? Sort of thing.
Because it's a 90-minute movie. I mean, it's an hour, it's a 2-hour movie.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But he kind of gets separated from her. You know, he goes following the shadow. She gets. And I really did. Okay, that was one thing that threw me off from a directing and a writing standpoint. I really thought she was dead. I thought the reporter girl was dead. Just because she was stabbed, she fell down, they kind of had that little look into my eyes scene. And then he goes away. And then later on, you suddenly hear, she'll be all right. And I was going, what do you mean she'll be all right? She was dead.
Yeah, he changed his mind. But he left it in because it looked cool.
Yeah. Carlo had a kind of speaking of deaths, that's kind of a memorable death there. Not just the dragging alone would have been gruesome, but the whole I have to crunch your head with the car.
I'm telling you.
That was.
It's like, it is very Savini-esque in that he tries to murder everybody very originally. So I'm just going to have him get caught by a truck and dragged down the street and have the truck turn and his head crack open on a sidewalk curb. Oh, my God. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, first he gets knocked out on the sidewalk, and then the car literally runs over his skull. And
yeah.
And I swear to God, even though I was watching it in a hotel room, when I watched that scene, I could hear you laugh. When I watched that scene, it was just
I could just hear right now.
Did you see his head? You know, I could just hear you laugh.
Oh, that's so funny. I know. I was laughing uncontrollably when he was. And what's funny now, we know Marta was the murderer, but she was really strong to grab that big dude's head and be bashing his teeth in on a table and a mantle and everything.
Yeah. Else.
I was like, damn.
She must be super mom when she's ready to murder.
And she can make crazy dolls come flying across the room after you, too. She's got some supernatural powers as well. And she makes children
sing. And
then
they have the really they have the really Hitchcock, De Palma kind of twist thing with, oh, it wasn't a painting he actually saw or keeps remembering in the hallway. It was a mirror.
Yeah.
Which was a neat idea. Mm-hmm. That was, I wonder if that's like was the genesis of the idea, you know, and he went from there. Mm-hmm. And then mom has a very memorable death as well, although my notes even reinforce it. That is probably the strongest necklace ever made. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know how that would ever work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For those of you out there that don't know how she dies, her necklace gets caught in an elevator cage and Marcus hits the button and the elevator goes down and she is decapitated by her own necklace.
Yes. Yes. And we watched that necklace go down like four stories, by the way. It's a little bit long. It goes down. But then we have a really cool final shot because even the credits and everything are done in like a pool of her blood. So,
and his reflection.
Which is deep red, you know, but yes.
And it says, "You have been watching Deep Red." I love that.
Right? Oh, yeah. Credits. I did notice that. Deep Red. Like, did we forget? What we were watching? We didn't know. Well, we talked about some keys. I mean, I definitely have, you know, Brian De Palma, especially like Body Double and that whole kind of weird attack. Body Double to me is his version of this, so to speak, with a lot of Hitchcock impressions. But that whole killer POV, like Halloween, Friday the 13th.
Hey, before you get into all those keys, I got a couple of awards that I need to share.
Yeah, do those.
And you will appreciate this. They're both, of course, European. One is the Italian National Syndicate of Film Journalists in 1976 nominated this film for Best Score.
Best Score?
Best Score.
What? No way.
Yes, so quit trashing Goblin, man. They were nominated.
Did he score it and then go back and put Goblin in just so he could get an award? No, nope. No, there's no way.
Well, they didn't win, but they were nominated.
Wacky. Well, that's wacky.
Okay,
that's,
and then there's one wacky. Other. The Sitka Catalonian International Film Festival of 1976 awarded Dario Best Director for that year.
Well, good. I can understand that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know who he's up against, but I would definitely think this was a great work directorially. We've said that.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to get those cool. out there. I knew you'd appreciate the Goblin one after you've been trashing them the whole show.
It just goes to show how bad that scores must have been that year.
Maybe Italy just does really bad music. I don't know. They do opera.
Yeah, that's it. I liked, I thought the movie, I would recommend it. I think it's a good horror movie, and it's a neat to see a different country's interp of horror, and to be that influential. You know, there's tons of keys.
I would recommend any Dario Argento movie at least once, because it's going to be something you've never seen before. It's going to be unique in that aspect. You mentioned influencing other directors. Apparently there are two directors it directly influenced, and one is David Cronenberg and the other is Rick Rosenthal. And these are actual scenes that they lifted. Cronenberg lifted the head exploding scene. He modeled it after the parapsychology discussion where they're up on the stage.
Oh, yeah, from Scanners?
Yeah, from Scanners. he basically modeled his scanners after that little panel of them up on that stage. And then Rick Rosenthal.
Yeah, right before she gets the psychic visions, right? At the beginning.
Right, right, exactly. And then cool. Rick Rosenthal, who I don't really know at all, directed a little movie called Halloween 2. And there is a nurse in that, I think she's a nurse, that gets her face scalded off in a hot tub. And that was lifted.
Oh, yeah, in a therapy bath. Right. Yeah, like one of the steel ones. Yeah, that's true.
And that was supposedly lifted from the scalding scene in this film as well. So that's
see, I think those simple things to me are much more body horror painful than a lot of the elaborate things that like Freddy and Jason and Saw and all those got into later on. Mm-hmm. I mean, burning your face and seeing blisters and stuff, that like hurts me when I watch that. Or mm-hmm. getting cut with a knife or stabbed with a knife or sliced, that bothers me.
Grabbing a knife, you know, but, by the wrong end.
Yeah.
I can't handle
right.
that.
But like, you know, your face being ripped off by a mask of metal or something or some weird twisted, you know, a bow and arrow through your throat, that kind of thing. It just didn't, to me, it's not as scary.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me.
Yeah, I get it. There's another little Halloween homage in there. You mentioned that there was a knitting needle used as a murder weapon. It murdered a mina bird, but it was a knitting needle.
Yes.
So they use knitting needles. Of course, Jamie Lee Curtis used them not to her advantage because she just stabbed him in the neck and then he pulled it out and fell down.
Yeah. Once Marco finally, you know, broke in the wall and saw the body and everything else, that reminded me of, I just got a changeling vibe from that.
Yeah.
From, the, you know, of the story of a kid who was, or somebody who was murdered years and years and years ago and we walled them up, like Cask of Amontillado, very, you know, Edgar Allan Poe-ish.
Right. Or Hell House. Yeah. It happened in Hell House.
And Hell House.
Actually,
yeah.
And in, I believe it happened in that movie I just mentioned earlier, The House That Wouldn't Die. I think they find those people buried in the basement, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And I got a big vibe of that corpse behind the wall. It reminds me of Psycho too. I think you mentioned that earlier. That's a kind of Psycho thing. And I've also got Brian De Palma written down. I mean, there's a lot of Brian De Palma in this movie. But that's because there's a lot of Hitchcock in this movie and Brian ripped Hitchcock off all the time.
Yeah. All the time.
I wrote down Scooby-Doo. Something about this movie reminded me of Scooby-Doo. Oh, and I would have gotten away with it if it hadn't been for you and your reporter friend.
You pesky kids. Yeah.
You damn musician.
Yeah, that's true.
And then, of course, I have Dawn of the Dead for the music because it is the same band that does the music. So.
Well, and I have that old, you know, going back in homage, I mean, storytelling-wise or literature-wise, of that whole mother will do anything to protect her son kind of storyline. You know, and I couldn't come up with an actual example of that, but I know I've seen that predate this. I don't know if it was a 50s movie or something, but I've seen that kind of storyline of, you know, mommy will always protect you or take care of you, honey, you know, kind of thing. Yeah, because she keeps saying, he's a good boy or my boy's not here right now or whatever. You know, she has that line or something like that. So that's in there a lot, too. And I think that's part of it.
Yeah, but Lou Reed says you can't always trust your mother.
Can't always trust your mother.
You mentioned... we've mentioned in the past director trademarks. I remember one was that Stanley Kubrick uses mirrors. And you know what I'm talking about? Like scenes that...
Yeah, and he uses 0-point framing. So everything goes toward the center of the frame.
Right. Well, Dario's trademark is victims crashing through windows. And I guess this is maybe where
it
started. Yeah. I've seen his films, but it's been a long time, so I don't remember them that well. But I have a feeling this was the first of many.
Well, yeah, like Suspiria, she falls through the big stained glass window thing. It's ceiling.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Thing.
That's right.
And then there's something like that in Plumage, too. Bird with Crystal Plumage has some glass. I think it's a mirror, though.
Yeah,
because she's
he's
a dancer.
Got a thing with glass cutting people, big time.
Well, he should. It does. It smarts, too. That'll leave a mark, you know. That'll squirt some big, bright red blood out. So wait, go back to your beginning at the very... Let's kind of loop back. So you said this was a form of what?
It's
you said...
Giallo.
Gelato? No.
No. It's spelled G-I-A-L-L-O. Giallo. And it's the Italian word for yellow. You know, like yellow journalism, but this is yellow fiction. It's like seedy
Penny
mystery
Dreadfuls.
Novels.
Hmm.
And it's,
interesting.
It's
okay.
A very, there was a whole decade or more of what they called giallo movies. And I'm pretty certain, at least from my knowledge, that they started with Mario Bava, who did other movies that I love, like Black Sunday and Black Sabbath. But he also did that Bucket of Blood movie I told you that inspired Sean Cunningham to do Friday the 13th. He did this one I put on our list too. He did Planet of the Vampires. It's a science fiction movie that is pretty renowned. I don't know if it's for good reasons
I remember that
or
one.
Not, but that's I thought that would be a cool one for us to maybe check into if we could. Mario Bava, then Dario Argento. And then Lucio Fulci probably came around the same time that Dario came around. And then Lamberto Bava came later. That's, it's either Mario's son or nephew. And he did Demons, which is another one of my favorite Italian movies that I happen to be discussing this morning.
Was that the one that was in the movie theater?
Yes. Smash everything! Smash everything! Smash everything!
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
love
now I remember.
Absolutely love that movie. So anyway, we're laughing because of all these weird foreign horror movie connections, but I wanted to bring it around full circle because last year, or last season, we did Let the Right One In, which is a really cool little Swedish vampire movie. And I said we should try to do at least one foreign horror film a year. So this year I thought, well, let's do Deep Red because Argento is kind of known for being a big horror foreign director. But
yeah,
what do you think? I mean, obviously it's not as good a film as Let the Right One In for story purposes. It's more of a visual.
Yeah, but
film.
The visuals are really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I don't think I agree with you. It'd be hard. I'd probably go with Let the Right One overall as a better, scarier, neater story. But it's vampires too, which I like.
Right.
Whereas this is mostly a straight mystery story with a slasher.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I'm thinking we should go.
But yeah,
Asian
that's a
next
good
year.
Comparison.
Our next season. There's a great movie called The Host that's kind of a monster out of the ocean movie that Korea did about 12 years ago that's pretty awesome. And then there's also Train to Busan, which is an incredible zombie movie.
Wait, Train to Busan, is that done by that guy that did Parasite?
I don't
Train
think
to Busan?
So, but it's on every streaming app or app platform. I know that. Anyway. We'll figure something out. You may want to pick a foreign sci-fi. So
there are no good foreign sci-fi.
Well, I put several on the list that were highly rated. So
okay. Well, we'll see. There was this one that I watched. What was it? I'll have to look it up. I don't remember right now. But there was a really good, I think it was Korean too, Korean sci-fi that has come up recently about the end of the world, kind of apocalyptic
coronavirus.
No, more like a you know, a impact of a sun going nova, or impact of a meteor.
Where,
or
have all the people gone? Wow, man, you're just bringing it back full circle.
There you go. See, I try to tie these things up. That's the way I roll. cool. Well, we like this movie. We advise go see it and get some spaghetti and sit down and watch it.
Yeah, check out Dario.
And
he doesn't disappoint.
Check out Dario. Even if you, hopefully this might inspire you. Go and watch Crystal Plumage and Suspiria. Not the remake, because watch the original first, then maybe watch the remake. But always go original first. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
All right. Tim, thanks so much.
Yeah, it's been real. It's been real Italian.
All right, man.
It's been profondo rosso.
Profondo rosso. All right. Talk to you next time.
All right. Bye.